Families have a lot going on. Let Ollie help manage the mental load with new cognitive health supplements for everyone 4 and up, like delicious Ollie Focus Pops or Ollie Mellow Pops for kids. And for parents, try 3 new Brainy Chews to help you focus, chill out, or get energized. Find these cognitive health buddies for the whole fam at Ollie.com. That's OLLY.com. These statements have not been evaluated by the Food and Drug Administration. This product is not intended to diagnose, treat, cure, or prevent any disease.
I'm your inner dream monologue, and you're fast asleep, so I'll be quick. Great job using the Colgate Optic White Overnight Teeth Whitening Pen before bed. When used as directed, it gives you a visibly whiter smile in just 7 days. So while I fly and talk to animals, you're removing teeth stains with ease. Sweet dreams. And when you wake up, keep on living life to the brightest. Colgate Optic White. Find it at all major retailers.
Dear Sugar is supported by...
The universe has good news for the lost, lonely, and heartsick. Sugar is here, the both of us, speaking straight into your ears. I'm Cheryl Strayed.
I'm Steve Almond. This is Dear Sugar Radio.
Oh, dear soul, won't you please share some bittersweet days with me?
Hi, Steve. How are you doing?
I'm doing good, Cheryl. And our theme for today's episode is when life takes a U-turn. And we were getting these letters that were very much about when your life's going in one direction and suddenly, unexpectedly, boom, through forces internal, external, life takes a very different direction.
Right.
And so I wanted to ask you to give an example, because I know you have like 7 or 8 U-turns in your past, at
and
least.
And we all do.
Yeah,
you know?
That's right.
And sometimes they're great U-turns and sometimes they're not so great.
Yeah.
U-turns. I think that one of the most important moments of my life happened when I was 6 and my mother decided to leave my father for the last time and divorced him.
Mm-hmm.
Because what that meant for me and my siblings is that we didn't grow up with the sort of father who we were going to grow up with, who dominated our early childhood years with tyranny and fear and violence. And I think that my life changed when my mother decided to U-turn her own life.
Yep.
And therefore give me a different life.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, the letters we're going to look at, because this is what happens of every life. You said it so well. There are a whole bunch of U-turns in people's lives, deciding moments. That's what we're going to take on. That's our terrain. Letter writers who are, like many of us, dealing with big change, sudden change in plans.
Right. And we're going to also have a fabulous guest later on who's going to talk to us about her own U-turn of late.
Yeah, I'm super psyched for that. Let's hear the first letter.
Dear Sugars, I'm 35 and fighting cancer for the 4th time. It's been almost 7 years since I was first diagnosed, and while I hope I'll live a long and beautiful life, I might actually live a short and beautiful life. My current prognosis isn't great, and the tumors keep coming back. Chemo doesn't work, and medical science doesn't have many options for me. After years of workaholism, I quit working recently to heal, travel, write, and spend time with people I love. Through much of my illness, I was married, but I've divorced after 2 years of separation. Overall, I'm happy despite my challenges and focused on making the most of the life I have left. Here's the exciting and conflicted part. I've recently reconnected with a high school boyfriend, and we've developed a very close relationship. While it isn't physical yet, and I'm not sure if it ever will be, it is intimate. We connect very deeply because he understands and also experiences chronic illness. I'm guessing it's always strange after a divorce to start new relationships, but a new relationship, while I look and feel like a cancer patient, is really tough. This relationship gives me hope and brings sunshine to both of our lives, but I feel really guilty connecting when I might not be around much longer. His illness limits his time and energy, and I worry that if he spends it with me, he'll be missing out on his future. He's been in recovery for years, but alcoholism and depression also make him vulnerable in a different way. Love and friendship are truly what I'm living for right now, but I would hate to hurt someone I care about so much by leaving too soon, even if I can't help it. Should I try to detach now before things become any more serious? Signed, Confused with Cancer.
What an amazing person. I mean, I'm astonished that she is so clear-eyed.
Yeah.
I mean, that idea of, you know, short, beautiful life.
Oh.
You know, to me, I'm pretty unequivocal about this. When I read the letter, I edit out a lot of the doubt and say, this relationship gives me hope and brings sunshine to both of our lives.
Yeah.
You know, giving love is the essential human mission. That's what we're up to. And in a certain way, she knows that more deeply and feels the value of that more deeply than I do, because there's a time limit. And I understand her anxiety. It speaks to her remarkable empathy and consideration. But hey, love while you can, and
right.
Love deeply while you can. And if he feels leery about that or worried or anxious, it's his choice too.
Mm-hmm.
Certainly talk about this with this guy. I mean, see how he feels. But boy, if he's on board, go for it.
That's right. I couldn't agree more. So many of the letters we get, they're complicated, and there's this and there's that and there's maybe and there's something in between. About this letter, I feel really clear.
Yeah.
When the sun shines, open your face to it. Bask in it. You know, we are all uncertain about what's to come. We never, any of us know when we fall in love or make a friendship or make a connection, what will come of us or them. I mean, so many of the letters we consider, we could have answered on this show. They're all about U-turns. They're about people who said, I thought she was going to be this way and she turned out to be this way. He said he was going to do this and he turned out to do that. I thought we were going to be together forever and we weren't.
Yeah.
You know, clearly I don't want to diminish Confused with Cancer's real understanding of like the fact that her life might be shorter than most. But I think too that we can kind of forget that none of us know. And so I think we have to love with fearless abandon.
Right.
This woman has so much awareness about her situation and her life and how precious life is. She's taken this moment in her life to quit her job and travel and write and spend time with the people she loves. And I think that this man should be part of it. And I agree, she's not alone in this relationship. He certainly can say, look, I'm afraid.
Right.
But that doesn't mean the answer is to shut it down. I think that would be a huge mistake.
Right. Life gave her a big U-turn. According to our cultural map, it was a U-turn into death and hopelessness and drifting away and disconnection. But actually, that's not the U-turn. In this woman's case, the U-turn was from illness into a greater appreciation and embrace of life. We're mortal, and it doesn't last forever. And our job is to love as much and as fully as we can while we have that opportunity, while we have that privilege.
Mm-hmm.
And she has that opportunity because she's refused to throw in the towel and feel despondent, and her heart is still open enough. You know, it seems to me that's quite miraculous.
Mm-hmm.
And her job is to follow through on that, have the courage of her convictions and say, yes, and there's somebody who's come into my life and it's complicated and it might be painful, but I want to have that. We give each other joy and sunshine, and I'm not going to turn away from that.
Yeah, the best U-turns are turning toward.
Right.
Good luck, Confused with Cancer. We wish you all the love in the world and a beautiful life.
There's a hope cannot hide. There's a beat can't deny. When the
Well, one thing that I'm put in mind of is, you know, our bodies and our mortality and the different phases of life that we pass through are often overlooked. Adolescence is a huge U-turn. Puberty is a huge U-turn. And I think we oftentimes fail to recognize that those U-turns are happening physically in us all the time as our bodies change.
Yeah.
And one of the phases of life that isn't talked about a lot, but it is a huge U-turn in the lives of women, is menopause.
I really was interested in talking to Sandra Singh Lo
mm-hmm.
on this subject because she has written a great, funny, deep, educational memoir called The Mad Woman in the Volvo. You know, she was 49 and suddenly she's like, Why does everything seem different?
Yeah.
Inside my body and in the world. And so Sandra's book is a really powerful and entertaining story about
and
a U-turn.
Funny.
So we're going to talk to her. Let's give Sandra a call.
Hello?
Sandra?
Yes?
This is Cheryl.
Hey!
And we have Steve Almond on the line as well.
Hey, Sandra.
Hey, Steve.
So we're calling you today because we're doing an episode on the theme of the U-turns in life.
And
as you know, there are all sorts of them. But we were thinking that you could talk to us about the big, is the change, does it have a capital T and a capital C, the big menopause change?
Yes.
I mean,
it can be called the change, also the return.
The return.
So the change is actually the return. I guess that's the way I've conceived of it.
Well, that's interesting because when you think of the shape of a U, you are kind of returning. You start one place, you go back up to it. Why is it called the return as well as the change?
Well, the change, you know, just in a little bit of the history of menopause, you know, in 1900, the average lifespan of a U.S. citizen was 48 years old. Huh. In fact, most menopausal women were dead. But today, because we live so much longer into our 80s, 90s, and beyond, and we're only fertile like those middle 25 to 30 years or that middle third, most of our adult lives as women, we are not making eggs. We are not fertile. So menopause isn't the change. Actually, fertility is the change.
Right.
Fertility is that middle part where the cloud comes down and then you lose your mind and start cutting up sandwich flows for people and nurturing and bonding and taking care of them.
All that crap.
All that crap. So that when that hormonal cloud lifts again around 46 or 49, then as if in a dream, you see yourself cutting up these sandwiches and then you start curling the sandwiches. And in fact, in menopause, a woman's hormone levels return to those of a preteen girl.
Yeah.
So she literally is going back to where she was before it came down.
Which I think is really interesting because I think a lot of women remember that age, you know, at like 10, 11, 12, right before you hit that adolescence and you begin menstruating, that you are kind of at the top of your game. You know, there's a lot of creativity and clarity and power. I would go to the library and read every book in the library at that age, and I didn't care who knew it, you know, and it was like a wonderfully fruitful time in my life.
Yeah, and you don't have to, you aren't really brushing your hair or your socks can be unmatched. And you're painting stuff on the walls like horses and roller skates and monkeys eating hot fudge sundae. Like there's no rules.
Yeah. Apparently not.
So this is what is ahead for me? Is that what you're saying in my U-turn?
Yes.
Now, a lot of the memoir at the beginning too, you're talking about that, I guess, were you at the bottom of the U there in the midst of the U-turn. Lots of things, I think while we're making those turns sometimes, things can be a little bit dramatic and muddled and complicated.
Oh, yeah. So the bottom of the U, that's what you... Okay. Yeah. So the bottom of my U was described in my book where I went to Burning Man with a bunch of women and my male, you know, friend manager of many years. While at Burning Man, under the cloud and the haze and the dehydration, I realized, like, as if in a Merchant Ivory movie, that my best friend of 10 years was who I loved, but we are both married and had children. And so I realized, like, at 46, oh, my God, my youth is over. I get it now because I've sort of been not, like, asleep for 20 years, but in marriage and raising kids and getting used to my Merlot at bedtime and the books I was reading. But, in fact, we made a prison break from it, from our married lives, and we had this extramarital affair for 4 months, and then it all tumbled out of control. We moved in together to a cabin for a short time, and then he broke up with me and returned back home suddenly one day, and it was sort of out of the blue. And that morning, I was scheduled to move my husband, my good husband, who had done nothing wrong, had boxed up all of my belongings neatly. He's from the Midwest. In like about 36 boxes labeled. And I came with a U-Haul truck and I picked up those boxes and I took them to U-Haul. But my U-Haul little room, my little crypt room, wasn't big enough to hold my stuff.
Of course
so Cheryl is kind of in a in a homage, perhaps, where you were kind of like burning books when you were on the trail, I actually had to throw out many of my books in the dumpster, including like 3 copies of Gabriel Garcia Marquez's 100 Years of Solitude, which I will never
That's
read.
That's 300 Years of Solitude now, yeah.
But as I'm hurling books into the dumpster, I thought, of all the fuck-ups you've done in your life, this is the fucky-uppiest.
Yeah.
I mean,
yeah.
It was horrible. I was alone in a cabin. My kids were alien. It was embarrassing, horrible, awful, terrible.
Right. And meanwhile, right, you're in your 40s. You're supposed to be a grown-up. You're not supposed to be fucking up anymore.
No more U-turns, yeah.
But, Sandra, what you probably couldn't see, and I know, you know, everything you've just described to us, you know, is all written about beautifully and hilariously in your book. But also, I think that the deeper point and what was so interesting to me about your story and the reason I wanted you on the show is I think there's something really important when we're in the midst of those big life changes. That's what making a U-turn is. You know, change of that nature is hard. It's
yeah,
struggle.
I think what you learn kind of at that bottom, and I think you're right. I always thought that my decades would be stepping stones upwards. My 20s, I would sign a career. 30s, I would get established. And by my 40s, I would be at sort of the Maya Angelou, Amy Tan stage. The Smithsonian was going to print a stamp of one of my books about the multicultural family or something. Something. Maybe it was going to be really great. Where it's kind of like I kept getting like worse and worse. Apparently, I'm supposed to be getting wiser.
Right.
And like now I really can't figure anything out. And then a friend did say this thing to me and said, oh no, you were never together. It's just that now your perception is catching up to reality.
Yeah.
And I was much more proud as a younger person and much more judgmental of other people. And if they had divorces, they couldn't keep it together.
Right.
And when it totally became unglued and I realized I didn't know anything, there was kind of a humility in that that gave me a lot more compassion for other people.
Yeah. And, you know, anytime a major kind of life transformation is being triggered by a visit to Burning Man and also simultaneously filmed by Merchant and Ivory, you know that it's not going to end well. That's just two red flags, both waving in unison. But, you know, what's fascinating is, in a way, you're describing this kind of, well, descent into madness or destabilized life, but one that feels, it's like Kerouac. It feels totally exalted and more pure and authentic and real and very disordered. But do you think that the passage into menopause is then, at least for you, was it a kind of liberation from convention, from patterns or a kind of stasis or unhappiness that you just had been unwilling to recognize because it was too destabilizing?
Oh, absolutely. And I mean, there are a couple of pieces to it. I think about marriage a lot because I think marriage is great for a lot of people. I'm not sure it's an institution that still works for everyone. And I think if people got married for 20 years and they're staying together in a unhappy marriage because their mortgage payments are so high and because the kids are so gifted and fragile that they can't be moved from their Montessori school. I think there's a fair amount of people who are in unhappy marriages. I know they're happy marriages too, but I think that marriage is a narrative that can be at least destabilized or looked at or refreshed if that's what needs to happen after 20 years. And I think, you know, facing the second half of your life and what are you really going to do with it and connect in a different way. And by now you've seen all the career steps and the big career move is not ever going to really bring you the full satisfaction because I'll be the next one.
Mm-hmm.
So I think it is a great time to think of all of life.
I absolutely am looking forward to menopause.
The glory days.
But listen, I'm fascinated because, you know, the way you're framing it is stepping back. People don't step back from the larger arc of their lives, and especially the second half. And there is this kind of taboo around any deep discussion of the chaotic inner life and physiological changes that happen in the second half of your life. We're completely phobic about it.
Right. And I think I like, Sandra, that you sort of compared menopause to this thing we usually associate with men, this midlife crisis. But you know, it's funny, we make fun of the male midlife crisis and we sort of whisper about menopause. It's seen, you know, sort of it's been culturally framed until Sandra Singh Lo utterly changed the conversation as this sort of negative thing or this thing that women dread. I do love the way that it actually, this time in your life, in your 40s, and 50s when you can stop and take stock and say, yeah. okay, here are all the things I've done. I've loved all these people. I've served all these people. I've screwed all these people. I've worked all these jobs.
That's your life, Cheryl.
I've done the right thing. I've done the wrong thing. And what's next? Right.
And what's it mean?
And what does it mean? And why am I doing this thing? And do I want to continue doing it? Or do I want to change course?
And I think, you know, the gift of menopause, even that phrase, the gift of menopause, sounds sort of suspect, like a Hallmark card. But I think because of the hormonal change, you realize, and I went through huge depression, and I couldn't, you know, get out of bed in the morning. And then the thought of, you know, paying the United Aaron Miles card on time makes you not able to get out of bed. And so women have a thing where they multitask frenetically and do the work of 10 people for about 27 days. And then the 28th day, they crash and can't get out of bed the whole day. That's kind of that kind of clock. Mm-hmm. And I think that the stepping back and looking with perspective is to just see how insane things have gotten. We feel so guilty about everything. Right. And also, we're supposed to be a size two. Right. I don't know how that happens. So it's too much. So the stepping out, when menopause, where you realize you can't even do one of these things anymore, you step out and you look, well, all of it is ridiculous. It's not I'm who's crazy, the world is crazy if we thought we could do all this.
So are you on the other side of that U-turn now?
Yeah, but now I'm 53. My hormone levels have calmed. It's kind of nice and even. I sleep many nights, which wasn't true for a while. So, you know, now I have my two girls who are 13 and 14, so I have adolescent girls the time I'm going through this. But we're okay. It's 7 years after the cataclysm. And, yeah, it's nice. To a certain extent, the whole menopause, you know, I think Jared Diamond, the science writer, had said that he believes menopause is nature's way of, you know, turning off the baby-making machinery in a woman's body, because that's very hard on a body, mm-hmm. and certainly going through labor is very hard on your body. So nature turns that off so that women can live longer, and you can have really healthy grandmothers to alloparents the tribe. And I love that idea.
Yeah, interesting. Yeah, I would, Grandma Sandra. Tell us again about Burning Man, Grandma Sandra.
And are you still with your Burning Man man?
I am with my Burning Man man.
Yeah.
And 7 years later, and then we get to find that whole next section of life. And, you know, we were just talking about it this morning of kind of like, but the thing is, you can find the love of your life and your problems won't be over.
Wow, I love it. Dear Sugar listeners.
I have never fought with anyone so much in my life. It's crazy. You know, but there's love there. At least with a U-turn, you start upward, you go down, and then you come out at the top again. So you're still up, but you've moved to the right a little bit. It is some kind of progression forward or deepening, or I don't know. But I mean, all I can say is really from my journey, I've had a lot more interesting conversations with people, and people have told me a lot more secrets than I ever heard before. So at least the stories remain really interesting.
Oh, what a pleasure to talk with you. You are just my kind of mashugana, as my mother would say. And we'll just get your phone number and just call you at random.
Fantastic. I will be at your beck and call.
All right. Bye, Sandra.
Bye-bye.
Okay. Bye-bye. Thanks.
You know, Cheryl, she just seems a little low energy since the menopause kicked in.
Yeah, really. It took us so much to draw her out.
But I love it. I love that she went through a major transformation and really has thought about and examined the life she used to lead, you know, with a kind of ruthless, tender precision that's almost terrifying.
Right. Well, and I think one of the things that's important to note, when she was talking about this incredibly dramatic stuff she was going through, the end of this long marriage and the end of life as she knew it in some ways, what really happened in the course of that U-turn is some things changed radically, yeah. but some things stayed the same. You know, she is a wonderful mother to two beautiful daughters, and she held the course there. That was something that, was obviously impacted by these changes she went through, but it wasn't as if that part of her life changed so much. And I think sometimes when we're in the midst of a U-turn, we feel like everything has gone to hell.
Right.
I'm sure when Sandra was whipping those books into the dumpster and weeping, she felt like she'd lost everything in some ways.
Right.
But I think it's important to keep perspective that we can go through dramatic changes and still come out the people we really are inside.
Yeah, and it's hard because what she's done is, in fact, admitted to herself that for a long time she was living under really self-punishing circumstances that weren't true to how she wanted to lead her life. And that's what we talk about so often. People would prefer a sort of known danger and that kind of stasis and stability to the disruption of making a change that says, whether triggered by Burning Man or menopause or some combination of, you know, biology and circumstance and will, I have to change my life. I want to be awake for my life, even if that awareness causes disorder and some pain.
One of my favorite poems of all time is Rilke's Archaic Torso of Apollo. The last line is, "You must change your life." And that line has rung through my life. At those moments of truth where I realize I've gone down the wrong path and I have to turn around and go back. Or you know, I took the right path and now I need to take a different one.
Yeah.
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
So, you know, Sandra was talking, and actually her first letter as well, about a U-turn that takes place internally within us. And I want to get to our second letter, which is a bit more about something that happens to us, a U-turn that's sort of imposed upon us, and then it triggers whatever it triggers. Let's hear the letter. Dear Sugar, I'm a 28-year-old brown woman who grew up in the Midwest. When I was 14 years old, I came home from orchestra practice to find my mother gone. She had been deported, and I would never live under the same roof as her again. On that day, I was a 92-pound straight-A student whose biggest struggles were anorexia and reconciling my home life, very happy but very poor immigrant family, with my school life, rich kids at a hyper-competitive school. Soon after that day, I gained 30 pounds, cut off my hair, started skipping classes, smoking, going to punk shows, etc. Somehow, I managed to keep my shit together long enough to get into a good college out of state where I basically reinvented myself. I majored in English, got a great job right out of college, went to grad school, and I'm now working my dream job in my dream city. Aside from my college boyfriend, childhood friends, and ex-fiancé, no one knew about my mom until just a few months ago when I started going to therapy to work through the shame and rage. So that's my origin story, a mess of body issues, race issues, and deep and crushing fear that I will lose everything good in my life when I least expect it. That's my origin story, but I wanted to write to you about how it applies to my relationship with my ex-fiancé, who was my fiancé until a week ago. Let's call him Tom. Sugars, this is a man I trusted despite the fact that trust doesn't come easily to me. I told him everything from the beginning, something I've never done with anyone else. I thought I had found the one. He moved to my city to be with me, where we moved in together and built an amazing life. For the first time ever, I was feeling like good things might actually exist in the world and that they might actually be mine. A week ago, Tom and I decided to watch a TV show together. He handed me his computer before stepping into the shower and asked me to pick an episode we hadn't seen before, information that would be in his browser history. So I looked at his browser and found that he'd been looking at hundreds of photos of a few different women on Facebook, women we know. He did it almost every night, looking at the profiles of the same 3 to 4 women online, clicking through all of their pictures. He had had issues with one of them before. They were exchanging text messages, and when I asked him who he was texting, he lied and said it was his friend Dave. Another was a woman he'd previously had a crush on. The third was a former roommate of mine who he barely knows. They're not even friends on Facebook. All of these women are exceptionally thin and white. He's white, too. I felt really grossed out and sad and confused. It's normal for people to be attracted to others and curious, but this seems different. Why so obsessively and so regularly? Why women we know? Why not porn? Why not me? We just got engaged. When he got out of the shower, I asked him about it, and he denied it. He kept denying it and condescended to me and made me feel like a crazy person. He tried to play on technicalities and avoided being completely honest or taking full responsibility for his actions. Finally, we had to sit down and look through the history together, after which he admitted that it's a huge issue. The photos are clearly a problem, but I feel like we could have worked through that. It's the condescension, lying, and total lack of self-knowledge that actually scares the shit out of me. I still love him, and I think he's a fundamentally good person, but he doesn't have a good explanation. He claims he was in denial about it, and I actually believe him, otherwise he wouldn't have handed over his computer. The thing is, I think he's a weak person who's too scared to get to know himself, and I don't know if he'll ever have the courage to live life with clarity and honesty. I've worked so hard to love me for me. Even now, when I feel like total shit, I wouldn't trade my size 4 brown body for a size 0 white one. But I can feel all of that progress unraveling. He's going to therapy to work through it. He's incredibly apologetic about all of it and is clearly heartbroken and is begging for another chance. He says that this is the love that he can't do without and that he messed up the best thing that ever happened to him. But Sugars, I'm worried he wants something I'll never be able to provide, and I'm worried he won't admit it to himself or to me, and I'm worried I'll spend the rest of my life with a sad feeling in my stomach every night before bed, and that I'll have one of those sad, dishonest lives that have always terrified me. But for some reason, I'm having a hard time shutting the door on Tom permanently. I honestly think this love might be a great love. At the same time, I'm terrified of staying and spending the rest of my life feeling a vague and nagging distrust that would destroy me. Tom has spent his whole life trying to please others and build this impressive public persona, but that has led to a weak and unexamined character. Can people like that ever develop the sort of strength of character and honesty that I need in a partner? Sugars, I've always prided myself on making the honest decision and being true to my gut, but I'm so lost. I don't know what to do. How can I know what's right? Am I wasting my time, or would I be throwing away the best love of my life? Signed, Broken in Washington.
Wow, this is a
long, complicated story.
It's complicated. It's really simple. And I think a lot of listeners will relate to it. I know I certainly do. I was at a really deep crossroads in my own life with my own great love. With Brian, my husband.
Mm-hmm.
Before we got married, I found out that he had cheated on me, had slept with somebody else. And I was asking this very same question that Broken in Washington is asking. Ideally, we fall in love with wonderful people and they love us exactly the way we want to be loved. And they're honest with themselves and they're honest with us. And it's simple and neat and tidy. But the reality is that sometimes people who really, really, truly do love us and fail themselves. And in my experience, it was really just an accidental thing. And I think this is the way, especially in this age of technology, that so many people discover infidelities. And I wrote about this experience in one of my Dear Sugar columns called A Little Sully in Your Suite.
Mm-hmm.
And what happened is this woman had sent Brian a postcard. We lived together. I noticed this postcard and said, oh, who's this? And, you know, I just got that funny vibe you sometimes get. And sometimes you're wrong about that vibe. Sometimes you're just being jealous and silly. So when he said, oh, it's just this friend of mine, I believed him. And then one day I was home alone and the phone rang and I answered the phone and she asked for Brian and he wasn't home and she left a message and I just felt funny. And I did one of the boldest things I've ever done in my life. I said, can I ask you something? And she said, yes. And I said, have you slept with Brian? And she said, yes. And I said, thank you. And I meant it because she told me the truth.
Yeah.
You know, we get off the phone and Brian comes home an hour or so later and I confronted him and he didn't deny it then, but he did say a lot of the same things that Broken in Washington says Tom is saying to her, like, this isn't who I really am. This isn't about what I really want. I love you. And please stay with me. And I was so torn because, you know, Broken in Washington is a really strong, self-assured young woman who doesn't need a shitty guy in her life. She expects good love and she deserves good love, right?
Yep.
And so what do you do if you're in this situation where you do expect and deserve those things, like we all should and all do, and there you are partnered up with somebody who's been a jackass to you?
Right.
And what I decided to do in my own life is I decided, you know, here's the deal. I'm going to ride a little further down the road with Brian,
mm-hmm.
and I'm going to see what he does to earn my trust back. And it's not about me healing our relationship and making it stronger. It was about him healing himself, working on his piece of this
that
brought this sorrow and destruction into our relationship. And so, you know, one of the bits of advice I could give to Broken in Washington, if she does decide to ride it out with Tom, I do sense in her letter that she kind of wants to, that the work, you know, obviously she has to work on learning how to trust him again, but he needs to earn that trust. He needs to be trustworthy. And what that is connected to is, as she points out, you know, he needs to be more self-aware. He needs to be braver and more ruthless about examining his own life and his own motivations and his own desires. You know, Brian did that. He's not perfect. There have been all kinds of complexities in the, you know, 17 years or so since this happened. But it was a break in our relationship that at the time I felt was devastating, that now I understand was actually, it made us more intimate because we survived it and came to a deeper place of understanding between us.
I mean, most people don't realize this, but for the most part, couples where there has been infidelity of some sort or another, most of them stay together. But the other side of that is some of them are unhappy doing so. And even more often, hopefully, they have to reinvent the relationship. And I have to say that what gives me pause here is this line, and I want you to tell me whether this applied to Brian in that moment after you got that news. The thing is, I think he, in this case Tom, I think he's a weak person who's too scared to get to know himself, and I don't know if he'll ever have the courage to live life with clarity and honesty.
Yeah.
Is that how you felt about
that,
Brian?
That line, I could have written it back in 1997.
About Brian.
And, you know, and I didn't know the answer to it. I remember when I decided to stay with Brian through this, I was so aware. I was like, you know, this might be a moment in my life, a decision in my life that I'm going to look back on and shake my head and say, why was I such an idiot? Why did I do that? Instead, it turned out for me that I look back on that moment and I say, I'm really so glad.
Right.
And, you know, Brian was weak in that moment. And he did need to grow. He needed to figure out this problem that he was having with women. You know, Tom didn't write us a letter. You know, I always get nervous about giving Tom advice. But, you know, I don't think Tom is happy that he is looking at these pictures online of these women. I don't think that this is a good thing for him.
He clearly wanted to get caught.
He was ashamed, though, when he got caught. He wants to make this go away. And most of us, we can't just make that thing go away. What we need to do is actually confront it and work on it and heal it and be conscious of it and make amends. And he's capable of doing that. It's all about whether he wants to do that. And so Broken in Washington, what you have to, I guess, determine is how sincere is he in doing that work. It's not at all about convincing you to stay with him. It's about doing the work he needs to do to keep you as his partner.
Right. I think the impulse when you have, you know, betrayed somebody you love, you screwed up, you snuck behind their back, you did things that you know would be hurtful. And of course, we should, you know, mention this guy was looking at photos, not necessarily sleeping with anyone, but just looking,
right,
you know, obsessively to photos of women who naturally are going to trigger this woman's deepest, darkest fears about her own worthiness, because these are skinny white women. But regardless of that, he's doing that, and he thinks the way that he's going to heal the relationship is to say, but I really, really, really love you, and I love you, and I want to spend my life with you. And that's not the right answer. The right answer is to provide a good explanation. And if you can't do that immediately, then you better do some work to get to the point where
you
can say, here's what I needed that I wasn't getting in our relationship. And I couldn't be honest with you about that because I was afraid for thus and such reasons. And that made me fascinated to look at these photos. I am a little bit, and again, Cheryl, I'm not going to argue with your experience. You put it beautifully, eloquently. You placed your trust in Brian and he came through big time. I'm more unsettled by the fact that he doesn't have an explanation and that she has fundamental doubts about his character. The other thing I would say is The first part of the letter feels significant to me. It might be that because of our legacy, our history, that a woman like this, having had, you know, the rug torn out from underneath her at a very young age, isn't going to have the same capacity to place her trust in somebody who violates, who disorders her life in that way so abruptly and with so little ability to really recognize that. And I could understand that, because the other thing that's an undercurrent in this letter, Cheryl, is she's still doing some work. There's no reason she needs to tell us that she's a size 4. There's something in her that is still, you know, quite fragile. And it's clearly understandable when you read the first half of her letter.
Right.
You know, she needs somebody who can make her feel secure and who's strong enough that she doesn't have to worry that the rug's going to be pulled out from underneath her.
Well, absolutely. The reason we chose this letter for this episode on U-turns is that what we see over and over again in intimacies, especially sexual intimacies, is that a lot of us fall in love with somebody and then they surprise us. They do something that shocks us.
Yeah.
They do something that we didn't expect, that's not in line with their character, that's not in line with their stated desires.
Right.
And even sometimes that's not in line with their actual desires. And, you know, we see these letters, Steve, you know, all the time, right? And so I guess I don't want to be a cynic about love, but I would like to be realistic about human nature.
Yeah.
When we think about relationships, you know, so let's say Broken in Washington does decide to leave Tom, which she has every reason to decide to do that. I can see the argument for that. Absolutely. And you say, well, then go off and find somebody who does make you feel secure. Well, Tom made her feel secure.
Until he didn't.
Until she found out this private online life, right? And I don't mean to say that like every guy she meets is going to do this, but I do think that in most long relationship, she's about to get married to this guy, or she was about to get married to this guy. I think if we did a sort of survey of people who've been with their partners for, let's say, 20 years, was there ever a time in your relationship where you found out something about your partner that hurt and surprised you? Because it was a U-turn. It was contrary to who you thought that they were.
Right.
And the answer is almost always yes. And so I guess what I'm saying is, you know, the question I'm interested in is the best U-turn in Broken in Washington's life that she walks away from Tom, this relationship that she calls the great love?
Right.
Or is it that they U-turn their relationship?
Yeah.
They say, here was this one idea we had about ourselves, and it was, you only desire me, and I only desire you, and you tell me the truth always, and you don't keep secrets from me. They found that this isn't true, that in fact, these kind of ugly, gnarly, complicated things are true.
Right.
So then what do they do with that? Do they use it as something that destroys them, or is it something that brings them deeper? And that's what we're asking about here. Only Broken in Washington can answer that question.
Well, I'll tell you, Cheryl, one thing that I think would be helpful in answering that question is if they can talk to a counselor, if she wants to do this, if they can talk to a counselor together, and she can say to Tom directly, I'm worried I'll spend the rest of my life with a sad feeling in my stomach every night before bed, and I'll have one of those sad and dishonest lives that have always terrified me. And also, I'm worried that you've spent your whole life building this impressive public persona, but that's led to a weak and unexamined character. I don't want to feel like that in my life, and I don't want to marry somebody who I feel deep down I don't respect. That's really harsh medicine, but he's kind of earned it. And, or at least it's hers to give, because it's a big, big problem. And it might be that it's a process that takes some weeks or months, but if he's worth it and, you know, they have the possibility of love, as you suggest, then, you know, they should do that work. Both
I think it's a great idea if she's willing to do couples counseling with him, because they're in this together. They're alone in this together. And probably it's the first time either of them have dealt with this situation. Well, any relationship therapist has dealt with this over and over and over again and seen all kinds of outcomes.
Right. I like this question in a sense as the final question for this episode, because we don't have a clear sense of where the U-turn should go. We don't know whether it's right. We don't know whether it's going to go one direction or the other, but it's clear that this is a moment of transformation. Either their relationship ends or it is reinvented.
Right.
There's no way it can continue as it was.
And we wish you all the luck in the world, and Tom too.
Be kind and be courageous.
Go ahead.
So U-turns, Stephen. We have taken another U-turn of the Dear Sugar Radio.
Yes.
We went from the beginning to the end, and here we find ourselves back again.
Yeah. We've talked about these kind of sudden radical shifts in our perception and the direction of our lives. And, you know, I think the ultimate thing that we realize, certainly in discussing that last letter and certainly listening to what Sandra had to say, is, you know, by a U-turn, we don't really mean that you suddenly know which direction you're going. We mean that your life gets spun around. And there's a lot of doubt and uncertainty that happens in those moments. It's like I remember spinning out in my car once and just how completely disembodied I felt. I didn't really understand what was happening. I just knew that there was this larger centrifugal force that was somehow spinning me and the world was turning around me. And that's an absolutely terrifying place to be. But it's also where life puts you if you're leading a full, rich, examined life. And, you know, the measure that we take in those moments are, okay, our lives feel disordered and chaotic. Can we somehow, in the midst of that, arrest our attention and focus on what's making us happy, what we're frightened about, what might give us joy, who we can look to in a trusting, loving way to help us navigate that?
And who we're going to be next. We always remain who we are. But we're always, if we're doing life right, I think evolving into the next version of ourselves.
Yeah.
Dear Sugar Radio is produced by WBUR. We're produced and edited by Lisa Tobin. This episode was recorded at Cybersound in Boston. Send your letters to us at DearSugarRadio@gmail.com. We love hearing from you about your U-turns and your S-curves and your one-way streets and your
blind alleys.
Yeah, your highways to hell. Please listen to us and subscribe on iTunes and visit our Dear Sugar homepage on the WBUR website for show notes.
That would be awesome.
Thanks.
Bye.